And now the programme in which listeners' letters are treated to the feminine point of view. It's called Petticoat Line. And the four women on the panel are Rennie Houston, Marjorie Anderson, Janet Hitchman and Beryl Reed. And in the chair are Nona Wynne.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Petticoat Line. As you know, treated to the feminine point of view, they say, but feminine points of view can differ very greatly. Now, we start with a letter from a listener who writes in red ink and doesn't sign her name. Dear Petticoat Line, I am rather shy. I find it difficult to get to know the young men that I think are attractive. When members of the team were younger, how did they manage it? Rennie?
I never had any difficulty.
You've got to go out of your way to be nice to them or make them laugh or giggle or something. But it's the kids that make my life worthwhile. They like a laugh and they like a bit of fun and they couldn't care less how old you are or how young you are. No, I like men of any age. And I get on with them all. All of them. But not as much as I would like to.
Now, we welcome to the programme Marjorie Anderson, who you all know very well from so many programmes on the BBC. We've tried for a long time to get her on, and at last we've got her. Marjorie. Now, dear, tell us.
Can I just say, you know, this is a fun programme with little nuggets of wisdom in it, and it's lovely to be on it and sort of to be myself instead of representing something else.
Yeah. Well, now, be yourself and tell us what you did to get to know the chap you fancied.
Well, now, that is a point, you see, because I was very shy as a young girl. I was an only, and I'm sure that it partly stems from that. I went to a very tough boarding school. My goodness, we lived like nuns there. And we weren't allowed to communicate with young men. And so I left school, really, I don't know, with a sort of lame leg. And it took me several years before I was able to. And also I was brought up to think that it wasn't nice young girls didn't. I mean, now the girls make all the running, don't they? We see them doing it all, it's lovely. But we didn't in those days. We waited for telephone calls and waited sometimes when we liked the look of a young man until perhaps he came and asked us for a dance or something. And then we were away and all was fine. But it took a long time.
Marjorie, though, you've got a touch of the Rennies. You're not answering the question either.
I'm sorry, aren't I?
You're saying how difficult it was, but eventually, obviously, you did it. I mean, when you have said, now, there is a chap.
Did what?
No, I never did it first. I never made the first move.
You never did?
No.
You were always not the pursuer, but the pursued.
It had to be that way. That's the way we were brought up in those days.
You sure?
It's a long time ago.
There seem to have been a few that were different. We were hearing a week or two ago about Eleanor Glynn, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Her granddaughter was on the programme, and it sounded rather the other way around. Anyway, with a lovely poem they wrote about Eleanor Glynn. Would you like to sin with Eleanor Glynn, or would you prefer to err... No, would you like to sin with Eleanor Glynn on a tiger skin, or would you prefer to err with her on some other fur?
Well, it drove me nonny to reading one of her books, my flower, and I've never laughed so much in all my life.
Now, let's get back to one of our lovely, lovely stalwarts. It's lovely when we have Beryl Reed on the programme. Now, Beryl, I'm sure that you were not always the pursued.
I think it's terribly sad for anybody who's shy, male or female, and they have a very tough time of it. You know what I mean? There are all sorts of things you can drop to attract people's attention.
Yes.
Well, I was trying to keep those out of the conversation. I mean, and actually now I think young people are much luckier if they are shy, because there are lots more activities where they are able to meet young men without sort of really having to date them. I mean, it's like somebody saying, do you believe in clubs for women? And I said, yes, if kindness fails. But I think that young women now have a great advantage over us. because they really can go to social functions. They can even go around painting old people's houses and still meet young men doing the same sort of thing. It's extraordinary that she writes in red ink, which means in some way she's trying to attract attention to herself. And this is a kind of very feeble attempt at doing it, poor little thing. But, I mean, I've never had any difficulty at all because I could sort of chat anybody up, you know.
I can now.
Or just, you know, throw a brick at them tied to a £5 note or something like that. But I am sorry for this girl if she is shy.
Yes.
But I think she must try and overcome it, and I think she must try and talk to people, not just to make a pass at them even, but to talk to them just like other people and become friends. That's the great thing.
Now we welcome back also, of course, Janet Hitchman, who never does anything the conventional way and never agrees with anybody on anything. My dear, how did you start out up there in those Norfolk wilds or wherever it was?
Of course, in my day, our orphanages weren't co-educational as they are now. So when I went into the world, all I knew about men was that they were the ones that wore trousers. But I was always in love with love, as it were. And I spent a lot of my time at the theatre, and I was terribly miserable. And the people in charge of me, you see, were always bringing forth other miserable teenagers, because they would say, now you have such a lot in common. Well, when you're a miserable teenager, another one is not what you want to meet, you know. If they'd said, we'll introduce you to Clark Gable or somebody like that, there would have been some sense in it, but they never did. And I eventually had to go into the theatre before I met anybody, and I joined a very good amateur, to begin with, dramatic club, and that is a very good way. I mean, anybody can get into an amateur dramatic club as a stitcher-up of costumes, even if you can't act. There are all sorts of things you can do. Or operatic club, something like that. It seems to be that you need the cover of this terribly extrovert thing, which is drama in some way or other.
Oh. But you see, what you've all missed a little bit, she doesn't just want any chap she'd meet, you know, painting old people's houses or on trains.
She might be lovely.
No, she wants to know how to get the young man that she thinks is attractive. Clark Gable, you see, we mentioned there. You see, how do you do? You've marked this fellow down. He travels on he travels on the 8:15 every morning from Guildford. And he puts his umbrella on the rack and reads his paper. Now, this is the one that you find attractive.
I know how to do it. Take his umbrella off the rack, trip him up as he gets on. That's easy.
Well, and carry a lot of bandages with you and tie him up and take him to hospital.
Yes, you need help. You need help.
Yes.
I used to go to the old Vic a lot, you know, in the gallery. Get in those days for threepence early doors and sevenpence late doors. And I was in love, absolutely desperately in love, with a splendid actor called Leo Gehn.
He was a puppet.
Yeah, and at the time, he was a lawyer as well as an actor, sensible man. And I used to follow him all the way from the old Vic to his chambers in Pump Court, hoping that something dreadful would happen to him, you know, that somebody would jump on him and you know, I would leap forward and save him. He never even noticed I was there. Mr. Gehn, if you're listening, I still love you.
And Mr. Gehn, nice. Take care, because she'll still hope something awful is going to happen. She'll trip you up. Now, it is this business of marking out the one, you see, that's the trouble. Once upon a time, they dropped handkerchiefs, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Or fainted. Women don't faint anymore.
Have the vapours.
And if you did, the men would step over you and let somebody else. That's not the answer at all. You know, we're not being helpful. We haven't done a thing.
Ask a question. A question of some kind.
Oh, yes. Ask the way to the Tate Gallery.
That's it. Yeah. Or something like that.
You may say, I tried yesterday trying to find a way to somewhere, and everybody said, oh, I don't know, and went on. But, of course, I suppose it's a matter of one's age. Anyway, nobody attempted to take me or show me. Well, Mrs. Hunt of Guildford writes, in a recent BBC interview, Monica Dickens said something along the lines that she found that American women are now more relaxed than usually they were 30 years ago. She thinks it is because there is now no stigma in divorce or living with a man that one is not married to. Does the Petticoat Line think that this kind of thing is a recipe for being relaxed and happy? Marjorie.
Well, you see, things have been changing gradually, and we've sort of accepted them. We've gone along with them. I don't know about it being a recipe, but I think things are more relaxed. Yes, I think we have come to the point where they are. I wonder if the team agrees.
I think it's very hard to say American women, because that covers such a big area. I mean, I've only worked in New York, and I find them very gripped at the knickers.
Oh, are
they're
they?
In a shocking state there.
Are they?
Yes, and very tough with their men. I didn't find the women relaxed at all in New York. I mean, I have a favourite quote of them walking past the theatre when I was doing The Killing of Sister George, and the lady was walking sort of 3 yards in front of the husband and saying, I don't care what you say, Eddie, we're not going to see that play. Eddie was actually dying to come in. Yes. Eddie wasn't allowed. But I say, I'm only speaking about what I found in New York. But I suppose if it has leaked out that people live together there
<they've found laughs>
and that they don't have to get married, and that it would be more relaxing. It's very hard to pass an opinion about American women generally. I think here, in a way, and I might sound rather prudish, I think here there's been a great slackening of loyalty and things in consequence. I think things have got a bit too slack. And it's maybe my Scottish upbringing, but I don't altogether hold with it. I don't think it's the best thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
I think it's much easier for young people now to say to their mother, I'm having a baby, and not be thrown out, and have the terrible anguish of worrying and feeling you could never tell your parents that anything had happened, which happened, you know, which used to go on in, when I was young. But I think that's one of the good things that's come out of it, that parents are much freer with their children. But I don't altogether think that the complete relaxation of all the rules is a totally good thing.
No, I didn't really mean that, Belle. I agree with you in this. I think that really marriage is best in the end. I think it's the best arrangement.
Yes, if one is fortunate enough
exactly.
Do it successfully,
Janet Litchman.
And my experience of American women's very limited. It's even less of Miss Monica Dickens. But the present-day relaxation, is it all that much, you know? You look around your own circle. It's like when the drug scene was about and people used to say, everybody's on drugs. And then when you thought, you know, how many people do you know who are actually doing this? I know very few people who are actually getting divorced or living with other people and that kind of thing. It's a terrible generalisation. And it depends on you. What I do think is a bad thing is that there is this thing in the air that, all right, if we don't make a marriage, we can go, we, you know, could stop it. Whereas people who've been married 50-odd years, when they were young, they couldn't. They'd got to make a go of it. I know some dear old friends who've been married 54 years. And if this present atmosphere was in when they were young, they would have parted. But they didn't. They stuck together. And they're now two very loving old couple of 54. I mean, of 54 years. Mm. So I think One ought to try a bit harder, I think. Mm. And I don't think immoral living really leads to happiness. I mean, what I mean, really immoral living, that is going from man to man, bed to bed, and so forth. No, I don't think that's happy at all.
No. Rennie?
I've become a bit confused about it since the question, but as a matter of fact, I don't agree with this promiscuousness at all. I don't. But some people are under the impression that it's a good idea to switch and chop around. But if the circumstances are such, and you really religiously love somebody, and you want to marry, I think it's the best answer. Aye, my wee Beryl was right. It's a waste of time messing around. There's no time in this world for it. You get a good man, whether he's alive or dead, and you've loved him, you've done something, if you've remained faithful.
Well, I must say, any of my friends who are having a great swing round and sort of going from one to the other are all nervous wrecks.
So we do rather disagree with her that we don't think it leads to relaxation, and we'd really rather like that old feeling of the same pair of slippers by the hearth with a certain continuity, huh? And watch them wear out. Now we come to a letter from a Miss X of Newcastle who writes, Dear Petticoat Lion, I was 17 last summer, and my mother told me on my birthday that she and Dad are not really my parents at all. I want to find out who my real mother was, but my adopted mother and father are very firmly against this, and we've had a nasty row about it. Can you tell me how to deal with a situation like this, Beryl?
Well, I think it's terribly difficult. I think the girl should, of course, be told that they are not her parents. But you see, when I was 17, if anybody'd said, no, you're not to do it, you're not to find out who your mother is, it would have made me go immediately and try and find out. I think there may be some reason that we don't know, you see, that they don't want her to find out. But if I were them, I would give her a free rein. They've looked after her, they've loved her, she obviously loves them, she doesn't say it's been unhappy or anything. They must give her freedom to find out, if she wants to, or to try and find out who her mother is. If it's a shock, if it's a dreadful thing that she finds out, then she'll be jolly glad she's got the ones that she started with. But just to say don't find out would make me do exactly the reverse.
Janet?
Well, most people with sense who adopt children do bring them up from the start to realise that they are adopted children. You cannot hide up a fact. And the fact that you are born to somebody is quite a different fact from that they have chosen you, which I don't always entirely agree with, because the child, after all, didn't choose them, and she might think that she ought to have had some say in it. And there is, as a matter of fact, an act, I think, going through Parliament by which adopted children are to be allowed to find out who their real parents are. And she could go to her welfare officer, or a welfare officer, and try to get this thing straightened out. There is a tremendous curiosity in children to know where they came from. Now, I'm always citing myself, but I'm terribly typical of this sort of thing. I was a complete orphan, and nobody ever knew who my parents were, and I was always obsessed by wanting to know who they were. I didn't want to meet them. I didn't care whether they were alive or dead. I just wanted to know who they were. And this is just natural curiosity. So a lot more care, I think, has got to be taken about adoption. And the truth, whatever it is, should always be told.
Rennie?
Well, darling heart, it's a matter of opinion. Anybody who has read my life story, I divulged it for the first time that I adopted two children before I had two children. And those two children were very, very precious to me, and still are. But I didn't want them to know when they were little that they were adopted, because we were one very happy family.
And then somebody, some school teacher, told my daughter one day. And she came home and she was very distressed. But she wasn't half as distressed as I was, because I was a possessive mother. And I cried so hard that she and my son never, ever allowed it to be mentioned in the house again.
Well, of course, you've already gone a little of the way around this. Now, Marjorie, the question is, dear, can you tell Miss X, who was 17, she says, how can she deal with this situation when the adopted mother and father don't want her to find out who her mother is?
Now, this is a difficult one, isn't it? I think she's got to deal with it and find out.
But how does she go about it?
This is a practical matter, isn't it, which I can't answer.
No, I don't know.
Someone who knows the facts about adoption.
Well, I mean, no, none of us do, but I mean, you feel she should fight this adoptive mother and father, although she loves them.
Yes.
You can go to the Salvation Army, can't you, Janet? Don't you know about
this?
No, that's
for lost relatives. No.
Oh, well, isn't this a lost relative?
No, it's the social service officer.
They'll help.
They can go back and find all about it.
They should be able to.
Yes.
It all depends what society she was adopted through. Yes. You see, if it was the Church of England Children's Society, they could help.
They would know who.
Probably were. Once she's found out, she can forget all about it then.
Yeah, yes, that is
yes.
It.
Yes. Well, we really can't be a lot of help, but we're full of sympathy. And now we come to a Mrs. Benson of Minehead who writes, Dear Petticoat Line, I dream a great deal. My next-door neighbour has a book about dreams and their meanings. And I must say that once or twice, the prophecy that my neighbour has pointed out to me has come true. But more often it doesn't. And my husband says it's all rubbish. What does the Petticoat Line say? Janet?
Well, the idea that dreams mean anything is all codswallop. I dream everything. I dream in colour. I dream in black and white. I dream touch, smell, everything. I dream all the time. And I have a theory that you have to dream. And I think people who suffer from mental upsets do not realise that they dream. And I think dreams are the detritus of the mind. In the same way that you have to get rid of, excess matter in your body, so you have to get rid of excess matter in your mind. So that if you don't dream, it all gets bottled up and you explode next day.
Rennie?
Well, I had a very funny dream once, and I've never forgotten it. It was so delightful. It was when little Her Royal Highness Princess Margaret got married. And I dreamt she phoned me up and said, Auntie Rennie, I want you to come up and see me. Now, the kids in the theatre call me Auntie Rennie, so it didn't seem strange. She said, I want you to see the latest present I've had. So I went out of the house and went in a taxi to where she lived. Now, I didn't know where she lived. But when I got there, she ran downstairs and opened the front door for me, and she was wearing a red pinafore. And she had a watering can in her hand. She said, come quickly till you see what I've been given for a wedding present. So I followed her up the stairs to her bedroom, and the whole bed was covered in the most beautiful carpet of flowers you've ever seen. And I thought, how lovely, but it's not very practical, is it? I thought to myself. She started watering them, and I said, don't do that, darling. The water will go right through and wet the bed. She said, no, they come up fresh every day. And I woke up killing myself laughing, and my husband was reading his morning paper, and I told him the dream, and he said, well, you weren't so far out, dear. Look at this. And it said that Her Royal Highness the Princess Margaret had been given a beautiful floral carpet for her bedroom.
So you were half prophetic,
yes.
You could say, a semi-prophet.
I'd still like to see her in that red pinafore.
Marjorie, do you believe in dreams having any power or meaning?
Not really. I think they're... No, I think it's a load of rubbish, that bit. But I think they're fascinating. And if they move you deeply, you live in them for perhaps a whole day, sometimes I do, or else they go immediately. Have you ever done this, though? Start a dream, wake up, then go to sleep again,
oh, yes,
and finish
again.
It. You pick it up from where you left off.
Yeah.
I'm lovely in dreams.
Are you?
You're gorgeous. I'm always the most beautiful person there. Oh, it's lovely. And I'm very thin. And I haven't got a big bosom or anything. And I'm floating about in lovely clothes. And people keep gasping as I go by. These are the good ones I have.
Yeah, these are the good ones.
And all these men fancy me. And this is where I rather... envy you to be able to go on dreaming, because usually just when it's getting to the best bit, I wake up. Yeah. And it's usually a cat on my face or something like that.
No second act at all.
No second act, or yeah. Not to be continued. But I do think it's an absolute lot of rubbish that, unless the only possibility that dreams can come true or have any meaning, I think, is that if you are obsessed by something at the time, it's possible that you go to bed thinking about it, and therefore it does continue to happen in your mind.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any... I mean, all that me floating about, there's a lot of rubbish!
No, dear. You float very prettily. Mine was, is, and always will be, I am stuck in a tube that breaks down, and I have to be on... And if you're underground in a tube, you have no way of communicating where you are. You can't get out like you could out of a bus or a taxi or a car that's broken down and go anywhere. And so it's put me off tube trains for I hardly ever go. So in that way, dreams can affect you just a little bit. Yes. They can flavour your behaviour. Mm. Well, you've been listening to Rennie Houston, Marjorie Anderson, Beryl Reed and Janet Hitchman. And next week's team is Rennie Houston, Isabel Barnett, Charmian Innes and Trudy Van Doorn. And this is Anona Wynn saying goodbye, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.